the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site that covers, of course, your Arizona Cardinals. And this is our first week one show, episode 583. We haven't gotten any shows from Howard this week, but right now this is our normal beginning of the week show. Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site, is with me now. Seth, we're finally here. Real football. There's a real depth chart. There's practices. And we get NFL football starting Thursday night with the Ravens and Chiefs, man.
Yeah, it's going to be a good game. One, I'm assuming that the Ravens win because the Chiefs always act like, you know, they don't need to turn it on until the playoffs, and then they just win another Super Bowl, right?
Like, that seems pretty much par for the course, right? And it seems to work just fine.
Yeah, and it's exciting, man. I think we're all excited just to get through this. The off season seemed to get longer and longer, although the NFL is talking about starting this last weekend, right? Because why not?
Yeah, I do. I have really liked having the weekend off ahead. Well, especially, here's the one thing I like. Cut down day, no longer Saturday. That was miserable. Two, final preseason game, always coinciding with ASU's first game because I have ASU season tickets. This change has been wonderful to my life. All the times I'm waiting on a Saturday afternoon forever for cut list to come out. I like the end of business on Tuesdays. So much better.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's Buffalo week. Week one, the Cardinals had their bonus practice on Monday. We're recording on a Tuesday night. They're going to have their regular week of practices, head out to Orchard Park, and then play the Bills this week. But this is not. So we're going to be back to our regular show schedule where we do two shows a week. Normally, this would be talking about the previous game. We don't have much to talk about. We've got a couple of things we can talk about, and then we'll do our picks, predictions, and props bet show later this week, and I'm sure Howard will have stuff, and I will try and get a preview pod with Nick Wotan from Bills Wire and kind of see where it goes from there. So that way you've got content. That way you've got, then you guys who are listening will have all the content in the world that you want, whether it's short from Howard, whether it's the longer form that we've got. But what we do have, Seth, and we have captains, and Jonathan Gannett last year went about it a different way. He selected captains. He selected six captains. This year's the players voted, and it was only for Kyler Murray, James Conner, Kaiser White, Buda Baker. What did you make of the change in the captain philosophy? Because at least as far as I can remember, at least ever since I started covering the team, captains were always a player-voted honor.
Yeah, and, you know, it just switches depending on who the coach is and how they want things done. I know I've heard of it both ways, but, yeah, I think you I think, you know, seeing it and the way they're going about it now, it's been interesting to see how they've come to this this understanding or what they're looking to do, right? Like how they're going to promote the captains and things of that nature, as opposed to last year where it was like
Gannon's hand selected them.
Yeah, and instead of just kind of having the coaches go about it, right?
And you know, I'd never heard that because Arians was really traditional. The players voted, and I think still Wilkes and Kingsbury were the same way. But it was kind of interesting and a very interesting, especially as your year two as a transition to player voting, that I think that was a really deliberate choice last year to, one, have the conversation with the players that he's selecting as captains about, hey, this is my goal. to kind of put together, you know, intentionally, something we've used to talk about Gannon and his coaching style since he was hired. Everything is purposeful and intentional. There is a purpose with everything that he's doing. There's a vision. There's a reason for all of it. And by player, him selecting is kind of setting the culture himself. But now that he feels that he has it, he lets the players do it. Oddly enough, guess who gets voted? A bunch of guys that they selected last year. And then the other wrinkle to that is that Gannon said that there's going to be game captains as well, which I've never heard of in the pros, but I've heard of in college, because it's a very interesting thing, like the kind of the shift in philosophy where, okay, I selected them this year, and now the players are going to vote, and players are going to vote for some game captains each week, which it's kind of an honor, kind of cool thing to add, especially when you have guys in the locker room. Doesn't it feel like just another added thing to motivate guys during the week to do a good week's work?
Yeah, and you know, it's one of those things, having guys that are kind of like the leaders within the room, it changes how just the rooms themselves and the way things are expected and what is done. And, you know, it's one of those things too, like, not to get into too much, cause it's still high school football, but like, my son that's a junior is one of the few that like is a captain and on the leadership council. And they do those type of things, like you said, more college based, and you know, they're picked, as you noted, by like the coaches. Right. But one of the things that it does too is like when you have that accountability and the expectations, it really hurts to lose it, right? Like to lose being a captain. And we've never really seen that in the NFL. I know they've talked about it in other sports, but like the idea that like all of a sudden, like you're not part of the captain hood and part of the group right anymore would be so there's this like intrinsic value to putting that into play and letting these guys really, you know, work on it and work on becoming complete players and men, because that's something that we, you know, we talk about all the time too, is like, you know, we've talked about it with Kyler for a couple of years. Like everybody was like, oh, you know, he needs to do X, Y, and Z. And it's like, I mean, there's a reason that 24 year olds in other things aren't ready to be leaders and things like that. It takes a long time to get there. Right. And now you're expecting a 23, 24 year old to, even though he's getting paid to step into that leadership role. And it's, you know, it's becoming even more now, I think, where you're seeing him take on that leadership and not just Kyler, but other guys as well, but specifically Kyler in this instance of earning that trust from his teammates and things of that nature.
And in fairness, Kyler's been a captain for years. But I have a feeling that last year, despite being hurt when he was selected a captain, that was a conversation that Gannon had with him, that he had a specific conversation with him many times about. And he said that there were things that he told Kyler that he wanted Kyler to do. And I bet one of those was to be more inclusive of all players within the locker room. He went from being quiet, just a quiet performer, to a guy that had a group of his guys, and the progression has been, now he's reaching out and, you know, being encouraging, talking to guys of all levels and stature on the roster, which is a change. Now there is, you look at who the captains are, if all four of them make perfect sense based on the stature with their team. Kyler and James Conner on offense makes perfect sense. Those are your warrior type players. If you look at the wide receiver room, nobody's there yet. offensive line. DJ Humphreys is gone, but Paris Johnson really wanted it. He did. He wanted to take. He so badly wants to be DJ, honestly. He wants to be what DJ was. He wants to be the leader in the locker room. There was a Yelda Froholt joked about it in the offseason, how it's kind of annoying how he's trying to be the, like, a veteran leader in there, because that's something that he aspires to be. He wants to be not just a great player. He wants to be for the team that DJ was. I think he looked up immensely to DJ. And you look at them, the defensive side of the ball, Kaiser White makes a perfect sense because he was that guy last year. Buddha makes perfect sense as well. And Kaiser even mentioned Justin Jones as a guy that he personally voted for. That would have been cool to see. But yeah, like the guys they have, and yes, they do have other leaders in the locker room. They do have other guys that lead by example. Justin Jones, Bilal Nichols, they both qualify as that. Zaven qualifies at that at this point. Jalen Thompson does to a lesser extent than to Buddha. Sean Murphy Bunting comes in like that. And then they got a bunch of young cornerbacks, but that's if Mac Wilson, even though he's primarily been a special teamer, comes in with that same sort of mentality. Dennis Gardeck, he's been a captain, but isn't a captain this year. Matt Prater, he's as old as dirt when it comes to the NFL. He's 40 years old. So, I mean, it really doesn't this team, like, now that you look at it, you're like, whoa, this team is different than it was last year, even though it's just, when you look at it, it's really three guys that they added to the locker room on defense, and then this room suddenly feels more stable, in my opinion.
It does, and that's the thing, is like they've needed to kind of they've needed that infusion of youth to go along with the sage veterans, right? And it's just been something that's lacking. And unfortunately, there's been a lot of guys that aren't bad guys, but are more, you know, that were more me type of players. And so now, you know, you look at it and you're going through things and you're seeing that this is a group that's kind of really buying in together. And that's a big deal too, right? Like everybody seems to be on the same page and wanting this in the same direction in the same way. But, you know, the caveat you and I have given a million times, they gotta win, right? Like it's easy right now, but they have to win.
Yeah. Otherwise it will get stale. I mean, heck, like look at Nick Sirianni. All it took was losing the Super Bowl. And then the next year, suddenly he's a bad head coach, even though they were great most of the season. They just fell apart late. It's really weird how the narrative can change on about a coach so very quickly. Nick Sirianni was fiery and a great leader, took his team to the Super Bowl. His two coordinators go. Suddenly, he has a bad relationship with Jalen Hurts. Their defense is garbage. what happened? It's just weird how the dynamic suddenly changes. Oh, even look at with Cliff Kingsbury, how the coach-player relationship between him and Kyler Murray, a relationship that's been close for a long time, seemed to sour even by then. And it was because if progress doesn't happen, it's really hard, which in some ways it's a testament to the type of leaders like a Kyle Shanahan is or Mike Tomlin in Pittsburgh, to like they've just had been above 500. Like they're always above 500, but haven't been a great team in some time.
Yeah, and you know, it's a matter of everybody beginning to work towards the same goal. And it's easy to say that everybody wants to win the Super Bowl. It's easy to say that, but for some guys, there's other incentives, and this group feels it. The vibe feels different. Now, it doesn't mean anything, right? Like, it doesn't mean, but the vibes and what they're doing actually feel different and positive in a really good way.
Yeah, it's been great to feel things. But I will say this: I'm ready for actual football.
That's the hard part, because we're in so many hypotheticals now, and like
we've been running straight off vibes all off season.
And that's the problem when your starters don't play at all.
Yeah. So we have been 100% vibes with the Cardinals all off season. Then we get to that, which leads us to our next topic coming up next on the Rise of Receiver podcast, special Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk about what are some, we'll talk about the offensive side of the ball. If the Cardinals are going to be successful, what do they need to see? That's coming up next on Rise of Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, Mr. Our Cardinals talk on the web. I wrote a piece on CardsWire not too long ago, and it's some benchmarks that, like, if the Cardinals are going to be good offensively, like, if they're going to be successful, if they're going to compete, like, Seth and I honestly think that they're going to be competitive this year, whether that is competitive and missing the playoffs or taking the next step and actually finding a groove and getting into the postseason. Well, we believe that the defense is going to, like, the offense is going to be the catalyst for that, right?
Yeah. And I think a lot of it becomes or turns into that this group is, like, again, we don't know because the product hasn't been there yet, but like we see this trending in the right direction, and you and I both wouldn't be shocked if they snuck in as a playoff team and then, you know, lost. Like, it wouldn't be, I don't think anybody would be like, oh, that's fine, but like it would still be in the same way of like, hey, this was a, you know, a nice jump from four wins last year. But I think the bigger thing is, like, you want to see this group not just be competitive, but win those games, right? Like, we talked about it last year. There were a couple winnable games that just didn't go their way. And you know, whether it's Matt Prater through the end of the season or whatever you want to, conspiracy theory you want to believe, that needs to flip this year. And I'm not saying they have to, you know, all their one loss or one score loss games need to turn into one score win. Like, no. What I'm talking, because one score wins and losses, we've talked about that. It's a coin flip. And typically it evens out over the course of a coach's career. Only the greats are the ones that kind of have that winning percentage above 500 in one score games. And that's what makes them truly special. But what we do want to see is that, you know, they're able to pull out some of those games this year, right? Like, not just blowouts of Dallas and Philly where they just were the better team that day, but instead, like, competitive games like the Seattle game at the end of the year that they win. You know, competitive games where they're not the better team, but they find a way to win. All of those things are kind of the growth we're looking for this year over just a flat out, like, oh, they went 8-9. So, you know, it's an improvement, or they won, you know, 10 games and stuck into the playoffs. But we look at it and we go, well, you know, there is some luck involved, and you know, they caught teams at the right time here and there. Like,
hey, look at the Giants in Brian Daboll's first season.
Right, exactly. And then, you know, and then they get run off the field. So it's one of those things. So
yeah, but offensively, I looked at a few marks, and I want you to kind of tell me what you think or what your marks are. And I think, you know, aside from the team stuff, they do need certain individual players to do certain things. And I take a look at Kyler Murray. And I think he needs it for two reasons. I think he needs it for to finally get looked at as a big-time quarterback. He needs more than wins. He needs to win, one, because the Cardinals have won. But two, he also needs to put up numbers. He's a guy that has, when you talk about big-time quarterbacks, big-name quarterbacks, two things that he has yet to reach. He has yet to reach 4,000 yards passing in the season. He has not reached 30 touchdown passes in the season. And I put it this way. If the Cardinals are going to succeed, Kyler needs to hit a couple of important benchmarks. He needs to hit at least 4,000 yards passing, because that means averaging about 230 passing yards per game over a 17-game season. One, that means he's healthy, and two, it means that the passing game is productive. And 4,000 yards is not a major benchmark for passers anymore.
No, and, but I also think it would play to one of the other things that you might get into, maybe not, but that would mean he's probably healthy for the first time for a full season, right?
That, and that's important because he came just shy of 4,000 yards. I think it was in 2020. He was like 29 yards short. And, you know, had he not sprained his ankle in that game against the Rams, he probably would have had it. He did this once. It would be having combined 35 passing and rushing touchdowns, at least. He did that in 2020. And hasn't done it since. And I think that's kind of a minimal benchmark, is to have 35 combined touchdowns. I still believe that he's capable of video game numbers, but the mentality might not be there. Like, he doesn't need to do that. I'd love to see combined 5,000 passing and rushing yards and 45 combined touchdowns. Like, the Lamar Jackson, it's a combination of Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, and Josh Allen. But if he hits 4,000 passing yards and has 35 combined passing and rushing touchdowns, that's when you can finally put him statistically into a category with other, you know, top 10 quarterbacks. Because right now, where he's at talent-wise, you say talent-wise, and Colt McCoy said it as well not too long ago, you will not find a more talented quarterback. But production-wise, over the last couple of years, he's very slightly above average.
Well, and so the way I would look at it for me is, like, the growth this season needs to be a combined 4,500 yards from scrimmage and a combined, I would say, 35 touchdowns. And that's a minimum. But, and if he gets to those numbers, I think he's in play for, you know, being one of the top quarterbacks in the NFL. And then obviously as those numbers go up, you know, he goes from, because I think 4,535 total would put him probably right in that top 7 to 8 range, right?
Yeah, that's a good number, because my thinking is 4,000 passing, he still has 500 yards on the ground. But I also think that 4,000 mark is also important for the passing yards, because you know, say, oh, he's got 3,900 passing yards, 25 touchdowns. That's Jared Goff, you know, and we're not talking Jared Goff of last year's Detroit Lions. We're talking Jared Goff when he was, you know, on his way out of LA.
Right.
And so for guys like us that believe in the talent of Kyler Murray, the national narrative is he's super exciting, but is he really a quarterback? He needs to hit that 4,000 yard mark. But that would go into, that's going with saying he's probably hitting in 500 yards on the ground. So yeah, your 4,500 total yards and 35 combined touchdowns is a perfectly reasonable thing.
Well, and to your point too, I think what that does for him completely is, that puts him in that top 8. And then as you go up, you know, you're talking now top 6, you know, or 5. And then, you know, if you get to those 5,045 numbers, like you mentioned, you're talking about not just an MVP level season, but like you're talking about, you know, catapulting him into the upper echelon. It also becomes, and obviously it's a good thing, but it also becomes a really interesting conversation point, because then it's like, all right, well, where does Kyler now fall into the rankings of quarterback pay? Because if he puts up even 40, 45 and 35, you have to pay him. Like, you don't have a choice. But if he puts up 5,000 plus and 45 plus total, you're talking about, like, okay, is he going to, you know, once again, reset the quarterback market? No, but again, that's a great problem to have. That's kind of what
it
you
is.
Want.
It is. It is. It is. And That's a conversation I feel that we're going to have about Marvin Harrison Jr. So here coming after year three, especially with his business dealings of things. And the running game, I didn't necessarily, and this is the thing. I know James Conner wants to make what he did last season the kind of the benchmark, the bottom of the production that he has the rest of his career. But we also know that Conner has yet to make it through a full season healthy. It'd be fantastic. So I didn't necessarily put a total on what I wanted him to do individually. Instead, I combined him and Trey Benson. And I believe the mark that I put was 1,400 yards combined between Conner and Benson, because last year they had Conner at over 1,000 and nobody else cracked 300. And it'd be nice if, for a couple of reasons. One, it means Conner's being productive, and two, if he misses time, that means Benson is very good. And so if you got Conner going for 1,100 because he's healthy all year and Benson gets 300, well, that's just by nature of not getting as many touches. But it would be good for a number of reasons. It would show that the run game is strong without Murray. Like, if we want to go crazy, like as a team, I think this team would want to hit the 2,000-yard mark on the ground, right? Because you've got Conner, you've got the running backs, and then you've got Kyler. So hitting 2,000 rushing yards as a team would vibe with kind of what we expect. But I put the running back room, and I said 1,400 yards combined between Conner and Trey Benson, because if this offense is going to be successful, it's also going to be successful on the basis that they still have a strong run game.
Right, and that's the goal overall, is that they're a complete offense for the first time in a long time. I know at the end of last year we kind of saw it, but I think we want to see even more from them and see them like really become and compete as a full time, you know, like big time offense on both, you know, running and throwing the football consistently.
The next guy for me, Marvin Harrison. It's kind of wild, some of the expectations that are being put on him. You know, breaking Puka Nacua's record. I just think if he hits 1,000 yards, that's, they need at least that for him to be 1,000. And 1,000 yards is not hard to get anymore. If you play a full season and you're a pretty good receiver and you have a pretty good passing game, especially if you're the number one option, you're going to get that. What is that? Comes out to like 57 yards a game on average. In, you know, 1,100, 1,200 would be fantastic, but at least bare minimum, Marv's got to get 1,000.
Yeah, and you think that that would be the expectation for him. And you know, again, overall, this has to be one of the situations that you look at and see how this team kind of develops as a whole, because if they're unable to do that, the concern becomes for this whole franchise. Now, you know, obviously there's caveats to every situation, right? And health is the biggest one, but for a lot of things there are simply situations that we want to see play out. And part of the thing that you and I have talked about all along is that this is just going to be a team that continues to grow and produces in a strong way. And that they're on the right track to be a competitive team overall.
Yes, 100%. But yeah, Marv needs a good year. You want him to have a special year. You do, especially as the number four pick, especially when, like we've seen, and the special rookie year didn't even come from Larry Fitzgerald. The special rookie year came from Anquan Boldin. That's right. That's a good one.
That's a good precursor reminder of like, hey, it may not be exactly what you're looking for, but like, if he's not putting up, you know, Puka Nacua numbers, it's not the end of his his career. Like, we've seen that's not a big deal.
Right. In fairness, Larry, when he came in, he happened to come in when Anquan was the dog. So that allowed him to build into that. Now, Trey McBride, I think he continues to be a critically important part of the offense. But I'm kind of interested. I didn't say if we looked at his production, his per game production, like he finished with over 80 reception, like the 81 receptions, 825 yards, which the 81 catches set a franchise record. Franchise season single record for receptions by a tight end, blowing away the previous mark that Zach Ertz and Jackie Smith had with 56. He blew that away. And his 825 yards were, I think, second all time in first single season in tight ends. But if you look at it, and he could have had, if we're looking at his per-game production over the last 10 games, and almost all his production came from week 7 on, if he had the same usage in those last 10 games that he'd had over the entire season, he would have had 100 catches and over 1,100 yards. But he ended up being like the only real passing game threat, because we saw when Kyler came back over the last several games of the season, the offense was Connor and McBride, and that was literally about it. I don't know if I could expect McBride to surpass what he did when they're going to have better passing options. That said, as still is one of the important things, I say 80 plus receptions and 900 yards. He doesn't have to hit the 1,000 yard mark. He doesn't have to hit 100 catches. But especially if you got a productive Marvin Harrison, you still have big production, but not necessarily like Mark Andrews, Travis Kelce, young Zach Ertz production, but still top young tight end type thing. 80 plus receptions, 900 plus yards, you know, 7 to 12 touchdowns. That sort of production put Sam Laporta in the Pro Bowl last year.
And that would be ideal for the Cardinals to have, I don't know, would we call him a star at that point? Like, what would be our, but yeah, that to have a guy that has earned that.
Do you think that if you're looking at the other receivers, if we're looking at Michael Wilson and Greg Dortch, those two in particular, how much production do you think they need to have for this offense to be working the way it should? Because you already have, if you're looking 1,000 plus for Marv, you're looking at 900 plus for McBride, you're looking at, you know, 1,400 rushing yards or 2,000 rushing yards as a team. What do you think would be kind of an ideal sort of production for Dortch and Wilson yardage wise?
I think from a combined standpoint, you would want to see around, you know, 1,300 to 1,400 yards, and how they get there, I don't think matters per se. But if you could say 700 and 600, right, that would be ideal.
Yes. I think that's important since entering this season before they got Zay Jones, as I've noted a couple of times, Zach Pascal was the most accomplished receiver in this roster. He had 2 600-yard seasons back when he was with the Colts. You know, Wilson didn't crack 600 yards. Dortch didn't crack 600 yards. They were fairly close. They were in the 500 range. But, you know, you'd love to see 700, like 1,300 yards between 1,400 yards between them, especially since that could mean a greater sort of ball spread, because if you got the volume yards from McBride and Harrison, it would be cool to see the passing yardage, you know, spread out And then that you know, Zay Jones comes back in week six, and who knows if he ends up with any sort of role after that. Aside from the fact they will, in fact, that some will get hurt at some point, and they'll miss a game or two, and they'll have to find Zay Jones or even Xavier Weaver. You have to use Cronhorn. But yeah, like 1,300 to 1,400 yards between Wilson and Dortch would be good.
But as you said, the biggest thing is we don't necessarily care how it all gets there, as long as they're part of the 4,000 plus from Kyler, right? Like, ideally, it would be your top four guys, including Trey as one of those top four guys, and then you'd get you know, and obviously not all 1,000 yards, but if you could get three to 3,200 from those four guys, and then, you know, all the filters running backs, you know, and you could get the random Elijah Higgins,
and you get
right,
and if you from Amari Mercado, yeah, those type of things. It's, but yeah, and then all goes in that. Is there any sort of, and if you're looking at offensive line metrics or sack metrics, is there anything that you'd look at for the offensive line, or would you look at more at games played for them?
I think games played, and then I think overall offensive yardage would be my biggest thing. You know, like, sacks are important, but Kyler does take sacks, you know, at a higher rate than a lot of guys. So I'm okay with some, you know, a higher sack percentage. But I want to see those, you know, I want to see the combined numbers be at a very high level, where you're talking around, you know, it's hard to say completely, but like, what would be the ideal kind of team stats, you know, from overall, you know, yardage when we look at it? Are we talking, you know, over 5,000? Are they going to be, you know, one of the teams that gets above 6,000, which would put them in the top 10, or sorry, the top 8 from last year? I think that's more where you want to see, like, they were a borderline, you know, top 10 offense overall last year with Kyler. So if the offensive line is healthy enough to make them a top 10 offense, which last year number 10 was 5,912 yards, that's kind of how I'm looking at it. It's like, can you get to 6,000 total yards from?
And I think what's actually a good metric as well is the number of starting lineups that they play. If they can keep that to like five or fewer, I think would be kind of a great thing. If you look at that, because that means they have a healthy offensive line and an efficient offensive line. So they're not running four different guys at left guard. You're not running three different guys at left tackle. You get consistency and basically continuity, which, as we talk about, is always very, very, very important. Coming next on the right.
Yeah, it's just something we haven't seen, right?
Yeah, well, we look at the, like, the Rams when they won their Super Bowl. You know what is kind of the key? Their offensive line. They started, I think they had the same starting lineup every game in the regular season, which was wild. That was wild. But yeah, move on. Coming up next on the Rise of Seared podcast, Mr. Cardinals talk on the way. Let's move and talk on the defensive side of the ball. What are some benchmarks and individual stats that we'd like to see from them? It's coming up next on Rise of Seared. We're back on the Rise of Seared podcast, Mr. Cardinals talk on the web, talking about the Cardinals defense. Individual benchmarks. It would have been nice to be able to pencil in and say with DJ Ojulari that we could simply say, okay, 10 sacks, right? We don't have anybody like that. And so if we're looking at the sack guys. And we now have to kind of look at a few different ones. What would be a reasonable expectation? Like, if the defense is going to be successful, if we look at a guy like Zaven Collins, how many sacks would be a kind of a needed benchmark for him?
Six.
Yeah. Now, I was kind of saying 6 to 8 because he's not a sack artist. But that also comes with the caveat. He gets at least six, but they need 4 or 5 from Dennis Gardeck. I'm not expect him to have another 6 sack season, right?
No, I don't think so. But like, if you can get 6 from both of those guys, I think you have to be excited about, because, you know, again, like you said, you've got a kind of one trick pony pass rush only in Gardeck. And then you have the opposite where Zaven hasn't really shown that he's being able to rush the passer. So if you're able to get 6, and again, the big thing with like the Gardeck sacks would be like, if he gets 6 in like, you know, 6 games, not 6 in 3
right,
games
right.
or 2.
That was one of the more impressive things about Chandler Jones. Like when he was doing really well, not the 2021 year when he had the 5 sacks, or the 2020 year, like when he had the 5 sacks to start the season. I think the impressive thing was when he was being consistent, he would have a sack in 12 to 14 different games. And that was the part that was really kind of important for that. And yeah, and do they come in bunches? No. So like, if you're getting 6 from Zaven and you're getting 5-ish from Gardeck, Xavier Thomas, would you like to see if he's going to have the role that we think he's going to have? Would you think kind of the 5 would be kind of reasonable to kind of expect for him?
I mean, yeah, you would hope so, right?
Because I know Demakeji, he had 3.5 sacks early and then basically nothing. But I think we're also going to see more production from the defensive interior, right? Like, you got like Justin Jones, who's had 4 sacks. Wouldn't it be good to see him push to 6 to 8? They paid him like that. The contract they gave him suggested that he could be a 6 to 8 guy.
I think he's got to be above 5. So, right. I mean, I know 5.5 is technical, but like you said, it's got to be above 5. It's got to be 6 plus. And see, you know, obviously up from there. But I think it has to be if they're going to really take off.
Darius Robinson, when he comes back, are you thinking 4 to 6?
I would have said 4 to 6 if the full season. I'll say 3 to 5 now. And then that's with the caveat that he only misses the first 4 games. Right.
Mac Wilson is a guy, you know, who's going to play some of the edge. So it wouldn't be, you know, 4 to 6 would be kind of good for him, wouldn't it be?
I mean, that would be great, ideally.
Yeah. LJ Collier, if he could get, you know, 4 or 5 in that role. And then you're getting numbers and sacks you just don't have. And they talk about, you know, getting the sack production from all over. That's in general. You talk about that when you don't have a dominant singular pass rusher. Because then you're like, well, everyone's got to get sacks. Yes, that is absolutely true. When you don't have Myles Garrett, when you don't have Nick Bosa, you have to have everyone else pitching in. You don't always need your star finishing. Well, you know, a couple of years ago, that was the 49ers pass rush. Like, it was Nick Bosa and then, you know, a sprinkling of sacks from other guys. But that's because he finished so well. The Cardinals don't have that. Maybe, like, and I'm trying to pump the brakes because people are getting really excited about Xavier Thomas. I'm like, But he's a fifth round pick. But he's a fifth round pick. But he's a pick round fifth round pick.
If you get anything from him, I think you have to be excited.
Right. Here's the thing with like, is he going to be the book? Like, oh, he's a fifth round pick and he's old. Ah. that's the part. The other defensive metrics that are kind of hard, maybe not so much interceptions, but from at least the pass breakup point of view, what do you think we need to see from the defensive backs?
You know, I think we would like to see some more on-ball production overall. That would be a big thing for this entire group, wouldn't it? Like, just for them to be a little more productive overall and then kind of build off of that from there. This is a tough, you know, group overall in that they're just not – they haven't had a ton of success yet. And so we'll see how that kind of – that changes. I'm trying to see if I can find any kind of numbers.
Like last year, their top pass breakup guy was Antonio Hamilton with 11. Thompson.
Here we go. I found him. Okay, so the Cardinals were 27th. They had 66 total. The number one team was 99 total. So I think if they're in that 75 to 80 range,
probably don't you want
that would put them
at least two of your DBs, two of your five that play hitting double digits, or maybe even three of them hitting double digits in past breakups.
Yeah, I think ideally that would be great.
And Buddha can't do what he did last year, which was never touch a football. Never touch the football last year. Never touch the football last year. 87 tackles. Number of tackles, that's always an interesting thing. But then most of like, and that's the thing, offensively, we can talk about like individual benchmarks, but defensively, you end up looking more at some of the team metrics like third down and red zone. That's what, you know, Vance Joseph talked about all the time. You've got to look at their third down play and their red zone play. But yeah, would you like to see... What do you want to see defensively from the – do you want to see Max Milton overtake Star Thomas? Or would you like to see Star Thomas emerge?
No, I think you would like Max Milton to become a guy that is trusted and earned the spot, not just given. And I think we know with this group that's not something you have to worry about, right?
Yeah. You know, Sean Murphy Bunting staying healthy would be good. Garrett Williams staying healthy. Don't you think that perhaps that there are basically two great question marks? And that is, and they go hand in hand. Can the edge, is there going to be a pass rush? And can the defense, can the cornerbacks play well? Because we kind of feel like the linebacker situation is solid. I mean, you got Kaiser White, Gunn Eccles, and Kaiser's going to be fantastic. The defensive interior, by nature, right now, is simply better just because their rotation is significantly better than what it was a year ago. And so it comes down, so they should, by default, be better against the run. But then
ideally, right?
Like you can't be really worse than they were. But you look at it's like, so can they produce pass rush? Can the corners cover? And the corner situation you feel better about because you've got a second year Garrett Williams that you felt good about. You've got a veteran Sean Murphy Bunting. And then you've got guys, okay, is a star? Can Max Milton be the guy? Can Keytrell do anything? But you feel better than a year ago when it was Marco Wilson. Well, you felt good about Marco Wilson going in, but then you're like, Marco and Keytrell? And then you never knew, you didn't know what the rotation was. And at least now we know what the three guys are. It's just up front with the edge. You're like, can they produce anything? Because over the last, you know, over the last 6 weeks of the season. We've cited this stat I don't know how many times. They had one sack over the final six games of the season, which was a non-tackle sack that Justin Fields ran out of bounds for no gain. It wasn't even a loss. It was for a 0 yard gain when Dennis Gardeck was, 2 yards away. That was the only sack over the last 6 weeks.
And it was a great one, right?
It was the greatest sack that I've ever seen Dennis Gardeck get credit for to this day.
I think the other thing with the passing defense has got to be they've got to have more or less, obviously, sorry, less than, I would say this year, 30 seems too high still because that would put them in the top five. Let's say 27. They have to give up less than 27 passing touchdowns because that'll be another big key to things. Because you look at the teams above, 27 or higher, the Dolphins who made the playoffs, the Jaguars who made the playoffs, and the Lions who made the playoffs. But the rest of the teams were just not. I mean, the Broncos, the Bears, the Cardinals, the Eagles, the Commanders, just not good football teams, right? So, I think if they can get below 27, that they'll be in a good spot. I mean, obviously, again, we give caveats on all this stuff. If they're scoring so much that they're giving up some garbage time touchdowns late, like we saw, with that Lions team and the Jaguars team, the Dolphins team, that's one thing. But if it's, if it's like last year where they're giving up 31 or 35 like the Eagles did last year, that's not ideal.
No, absolutely. But I think if this comes down to that. I mean, they just need to be better defensively. And the offense, truthfully, it is the question mark. We feel confident about the offense, and we hope the defense is better. And for the defense, it's a question of how much better. Are they just going to be marginally better than atrocious? Are they going to be tolerably okay? Are they going to be a middle-of-the-road defense? Or could they surprise and be, as a unit, above average? And if they're above average, if they're tolerable and the offense is good, this is going to be a team that's going to compete, maybe not make, but compete for the postseason. Some people think we're going to see a lot of 35-30 games. If the Cardinals playing a lot of 35-30 games, guess what? That'll be fun as heck to watch. And that would match, if we're comparing it to another team 2 years ago, the Detroit Lions. That was exactly them.
Right, exactly. And that's what's the goal in this whole situation.
And with that, we'll go ahead and wrap up this edition of the Rise of Sierra podcast, Mr. Harv Cardinals Talk on the Web. This is episode 583. So then I'll be back later in the week where you will hear our preview picks and predictions, prop bets, and fun things like that. I hope to have an opponent show as well, and then we'll see what Howard offers as well. So plenty of content, probably between 3 and 5 shows total this week. But that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. I'm about to cough, so I'm going to get off the air right now so you don't hear it. We'll be back again soon. Thanks for listening, as always.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, rise up, Sea Red. Whoa!